Good afternoon. Yesterday we talked about impermanence, one of the three marks of existence, or the three Dharma seals. Impermanence means that everything, really everything, is in a constant state of change, flux. So today we'll talk about non-self. Non-self, as you might surmise, is directly related to impermanence. So we do experience a sense of self. You know, we have bodies that persist for a while, and we can move them and they change, but there's this sense of self. With insight into impermanence, we see that we don't, as Sung San put it, we don't actually exist. That's how he put it. Meaning, I think, that we don't exist as something fixed. We can't put our finger on ourselves and say, this is me, and it will always be this way. It will never change. Looking into what he has taught a little bit more, for impermanence, he presented this verse, all compounded things are impermanent. The second line of this verse is about non-self. And it goes like this: all dharmas are without self-nature. So we can ask, why? Why are all things that we say that can be identified, like all dharmas, ourselves, our thoughts, our feelings, the floor, other people, birds, the wind, why are they, those dharmas, actually without self-nature? And it is, of course, because if we say that all things are in a constant state of change and cannot be pinned down and become permanent. So the self that we have identified is through convention or is provisional. This doesn't mean it's wrong. I mean, we don't want to, as we sometimes say, get attached to emptiness and that there is no meaning in things. We have these bodies, and so do other people, and there are other sentient beings, and we vow to become one with them, take care of them. To understand non-self means to understand how it truly is, and how we truly are, what we are. So yesterday I also made reference to teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh, and so here's something from him about non-self in this same chapter on the three Dharma seals. And I'm going to quote here. He says, from the point of view of time, we say impermanence. And from the point of view of space, we say non-self. We cannot say, I can accept impermanence, but non-self is too difficult. They are the same. Nothing has a separate existence or a separate self. Everything has to interbe with everything else. So from the point of view of time, he says, we say impermanence, and from space, non-self. If you really think about that, I mean, you could almost interchange those, but it doesn't matter. Sort of interesting to think about. He points out that this teaching is not a philosophy, not a doctrine. So it's not something that we believe, but something that, from the Buddhist perspective, is true. And that we can experience is true. And maybe some of you have. So how far can this be taken, this idea of non-self, and what does it mean? Here's a little something from him. You know, this book was published, from which I am gathering some of this information from him, more than 25 years ago. And in that book he said, you know, Muslims are Hindus, and vice versa. Today, what could we say? These days, this season.
Could you repeat what he said 25
years? Muslims are Hindus.
Hindus?
Muslims are Hindus, yes. Not separate. To me, that makes me think of Democrats or Republicans. Yeah, so that, I think, gives us a sense of how profound this can be and how far it reaches in, you know, fulfilling the teachings of Buddhism. At least it gives that sense to me. Of course, I can understand that it's true, but to experience it as true directly is another story. Here's something from Zen Master Jibong. You know, the way he defined emptiness, or described emptiness, he said emptiness means, and this came to me through Zhongbong Sunsa, emptiness means no separation. So it's not that phenomena don't exist. If you think you don't exist, you could tell that to Zhongbong Sunsa when you meet him, and his Zen stick might teach you something. But rather that they don't exist independent of everything else. And this is what we were talking about yesterday in terms of impermanence. Thich Nhat Hanh says that we are made from things that are not us, or at least not what we identify as us. We are made up of non-we things. So when Zen Master Sung San says that each thing arises and returns to emptiness, he does not mean, at least I don't think he does, that things arise and they return to nothingness. Rather, they return, perhaps more correctly, to that which is outside of being and non-being, this inter-being. So I'll throw in here an old teaching of Zen Master Sung San's about how the cloud and the child's smile are related. If you've heard this one, you know, there's the cloud, which drops the rain, and which makes the grass grow, which the cow eats, and the cow's milk is used to make ice cream, which is then purchased with 25 cents. That's another story. And then the child gets the ice cream, tastes it, smiles. So no cloud, no smile, that interconnectedness. I want to take a moment to try on some terms here. This is something I ran across as I was reading and preparing. I would like to say these things out loud and just see how they land for you. No self, non-self, not self. So no self, non-self, not self. Do any of those feel different when you hear them?
Not self sounds like other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And of course, each of these is being applied to this idea of non-self or not self. No self, non-self, not self. Well, here's how I receive them. Just give my sort of perspective on this language. Of course, you know, we say that language can never quite get to it. At least in some way of sort of defining things, it can sort of artistically create an experience, but it doesn't define things, and things aren't defined in words. No self for me conjures up a sense of illusion or delusion, like there's no self, yet, you know, here's this body, so am I deluded? Is there really nothing there? Am I dreaming? Am I, you know, living in some kind of matrix fantasy where there isn't anything there? No self, that's what that does for me. Non-self, for me, does almost the same thing. It's kind of like no self. When I hear not self, I think that it's like a reminder that what I experience as something is this temporary body and mind. It does exist, but it exists not as a self, not self, but as a manifestation of everything, an aspect of everything. It's not an illusion, but it's not a separate self, not self. We can say, not I. Sometimes we say, not to. Or somebody has, one teacher has in the past, I didn't look that up. By the way, this not self is a rendering, you know, I picked this up in some reading. I don't know if I'd heard it before, but apparently a couple of contemporary Buddhist teachers, scholars, have pointed to this, have used this language of not self rather than non-self. One was Alexander Wynne, apparently he's a religious scholar, and another Buddhist, American Buddhist teacher, Gil Fronsdale. So both contemporaries of our time. Yesterday I said that per Thich Nhat Hanh, deep penetration into impermanence brings one into contact with that which is, he said, beyond permanence and impermanence, and beyond opposites. He said something similar in terms of non-self, using the metaphor of the wave and the water. So if, you might have heard this one before. You know, the 10,000 things, all relative things, compounded things, are like waves. Each wave is distinct and separate, but none are separate from the ocean. So this is an interesting metaphor for our nature, you know, distinct but not separate from one. So to understand the self deeply is to experience the absolute. And vice versa. So I'm just going to wrap up here. The teachings of impermanence and non-self or not-self are great and wonderful. They point us in the direction of understanding. But as I said yesterday, as students of Zen, realizing the truth of these teachings is not dependent on our thinking, not on belief, not on cognition, but rather through experience. This experience can come through practice. So that's why we practice. And when we practice in Zen, we let go of words and ideas, right? We use certain techniques to step away from thinking. Zen Master Sung said cut off thinking, but step out of thinking or not depend upon thinking because for lots of us, when we're practicing, there are thoughts and feelings, sensation, all of those things. But we don't depend upon them or follow them and attach to them, whether they're pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. This is why, you know, our situation, which might feel good or feel bad, is not we could almost say, not relevant to our practice in the moment. We just practice regardless of what is going on. I want to throw something in. It's maybe only peripheral related. I was once time describing my practice at that time to a teacher, a Zen master. And I was talking about how I really was sort of bearing down on it with all my sort of attention and kind of, in a sense, force. And what he said was, that's not good practice because it reinforces a sense of I, a strong sense of I. And I think that he was right in saying that. So I still sometimes get into that kind of mode where, like I need to cut through something and so that I can attain something else. But it does, I think, create a strong sense of me doing something or trying to get rid of something when neither one are necessary. So if we let go of thinking, and it doesn't mean we don't try, because, you know, as I might have said yesterday, or I know I said it in some Dharma dialogues, you know, this middle way is not being asleep in our lives and doing nothing and kind of cruising. Neither is it driving ourselves in an extreme way. You know, Shakyamuni Buddha discovered that that isn't helpful either. But following this middle path of practice, which is not extreme, but not giving up either. It's kind of continuing in this aim of our mission, which is to wake up and be helpful. And so in doing so, you know, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, we can see through this self and understand that we are waves and part of the, which are part of the ocean. Okay, so thank you for listening.